following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Another week of Inside Eagle Nation. Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, to bring you anything and everything you want to know about the past week in Eagle Nation. Before we dive too deep into the news and notes, you look a little different. Maybe a year older? How was the 35th trip around the sun?
17 and a half times two, thank you.
Carry the one, sure.
Ryan Chambers brought up a really good point or a text line that these about 5 weeks, it's almost everybody's birthday. Chris Draper, his wife Christine, Frank's on the 29th, I'm on the 30th, CB's on the 31st, my mom's actually on the 31st, and then today, the September 1st, the great Barry McKnight.
Oh, I forgot about Barry. It's happy birthday, Barry.
So we go from one text line to the other, but the 35 was good. We're a couple days in now.
Bouncing around between text lines.
There's a lot to keep track of, especially with everything that we talk about.
There is.
But I always enjoy this time of the year because I know it's football getting close, and especially this year with not being sure if there's going to be a season, but looking up to the clock, which has officially been reset. We're down to 11 days with our new countdown, and you're just feeling more and more like Campbell's going to be making the trip and we're going to have something. I know maybe not have felt that way at times last week, which we will talk about in some detail. But like you said, these last couple shows, the closer you get, the better you feel. And it's different this year than another year. It's not just that you're getting closer to the start of a new season, and we're getting closer to the start of a new season that we weren't sure we were going to have.
We talked about it last week, how it was a kind of a momentous week for us. I really flipped the switch of this is football season and ready to roll. I switched the countdown clock, and we're ready to rock and roll for the Campbells coming in on the 12th. And we'll fully get into that next week. We'll talk to Phil Steele to give his kind of college football preview and overview and dive into the Sun Belt and Georgia Southern. We will give our preview of Georgia Southern football.
Because you got to keep in mind, we're two of the very, very few people that's actually been to practice and know what's going on with this team. So everything else that's being put out there, it's not really from firsthand experience. And we've had our post-practice reports on gseagles.com. Granted, with the stoppage last week, we didn't have a chance to see another scrimmage. But getting back into the rhythm of things and getting closer to game week, I mean, we've been there. We've seen what's going on, and we'll be able to provide you with a little bit more depth once next week gets here.
We'll dive into football fully a little bit later on. But first, as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and a great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com for both commercial and residential customers. Their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. We talked about the text lines earlier that we have going, and want to send a couple of shout outs and well wishes to our buddies down in Louisiana, both at Louisiana Lafayette and ULM. Jay Walker, Nick White, both of those guys, tremendous friends of ours. Talking to both of them, it seems like Monroe actually got hit by the hurricane and the storms a little bit harder than Lafayette did. Everybody is A-OK as far as our friends and crew are concerned. I think Nick had sent us a video that Malone Stadium may have taken a little bit of a hit with the home radio booth with a window being knocked out. But as far as everything on the grand scheme of things, everybody A-OK.
And the visiting radio booth's fine, so that'll be good for us at the end of the month.
Beautiful.
No, but knowing how bad it could have gotten, and we know that Lake Charles got hit hard, and some of the images that came out from the McNeese campus were pretty harrowing, but everybody is okay. Everybody needs to be okay right now. We're already dealing with enough, and that's good. That's very good.
So good to hear all of our friends down in the boot state that we will get to visit on back-to-back weeks coming up in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. 26th and the 3rd.
I like the state of Louisiana. I don't know what it is. I like going there.
The food?
Well, yeah, that's probably
number one.
The food and the fact that they feed us pretty well.
And this could potentially be, number one, our last trip to Cajun Field before they possibly renovate. They've been talking about renovations for a number of years. But Cajun Field is one of the older facilities in the league, and it's been rumored that they were going to do some upkeep within the last couple of years, but the thought is that that may move forward at the end of this season. I know that COVID has put a wrinkle in that. And getting a chance to go to ULM, we always say that that's one of the highest press boxes, not just in the G5, but anywhere. And getting to do it in back-to-back weeks to start conference play against two from the Western Division, Georgia Southern's going to be tested pretty quickly.
That's a Georgia Southern football team that announced earlier on last week that the captains have been named for Georgia Southern football. A little bit different from what you've seen in years past. Five captains named, and talking to Coach Lunsford about it earlier on yesterday for an interview in Blue White Weekly that'll come up in the next couple of weeks. But the fact that everybody on the team votes for an offensive player, a defensive player, and a specialist that they're going to have as their captain or would like to have as their captain. And then they tally up the votes. Well, there were so many people that got votes, first of all, and there were so many that got a high number of votes that normally you would have three or four captains. This year, Georgia Southern with five. On the defensive side, you've got Raymond Johnson III and Rashad Bird. Offensive, you've got Shy Wirtz and J.D. King. And then the specialist, you have Ryan Langan. Now, before we really dive into this captain as a whole, I'm going to make it my personal mission, and it may take me a little while, but I am going to find out who is the last player to be a long snapper and be a captain.
Remember a year ago when Tyler Bass was named a captain?
I was really going to be upset if you were saying, remember a year ago when somebody did it?
I'm not going to do that to
okay.
you. A year ago when Bass was named captain, we had to think, geez, he must be one of the only kickers ever to be named a captain. We found out Wyoming's Cooper Roth, who's now in the NFL, was the only other one in the country a year ago. But as far as a long snapper being named a captain, Langan, very deserving. That team loves him. He is a preseason All-American. You know he has the on-field chops. See, I think it depends on if you had season-long captains or if you had game captains. Because I think back to Coach Jeff Munkin, he had game captains.
Right.
And that made me think, okay, was the great Carter Jones ever a game captain out of Colquitt County?
And you've also got to think, a lot of times on senior day, you'll have all of your seniors go out on the field
sure.
serving as a captain. Does that count?
I think that's different than being able to go out to the 50-yard line every game.
See, that's what I think, too.
This is a pretty, not just a big deal, but this is a very, very unique thing. You could have expected the other four.
Right.
Brashad and Shire repeat captains. Raymond's an NFL prospect. J.D. King doesn't say a whole lot. He lets his shoulders and his running do the talking. But for Lang to be a captain, long snapper, he does represent the specialist. To represent tiny Cedar Rapids, Nebraska, where he was playing not 11-man football for his career, just such an awesome thing. And getting a chance to honor his friend, the late Sam Cook, the punter from Nebraska, who passed away 4 years ago, switching his number to 27. We talked about that on a previous edition of the podcast. I love it. Absolutely love it.
I think it goes to show how much this team respects Ryan Langan, because there's a lot of guys around this team that are good guys, good locker room guys, and we've talked about it the last couple of weeks, especially since Langen getting all the national attention with preseason award watch lists and preseason All-Americans, that on the field, it's hard to remember a bad snap by Ryan Langen, him not being able to do his job to the fullest.
I'll do you one better. In 3 years, he hasn't had one.
That's why it's hard to remember.
That's one we started tracking last year because somebody, I think Frank brought it up, like, I don't remember him having a bad snap.
Right.
He hasn't had one in 3 years.
And so you see that on the field, what he's able to do. But I think it takes a whole new level to be voted as a captain by your teammates when you're a long snapper. And that's no knock on long snappers by any stretch of the imagination. It's just not the people that you would think are the captains, team leaders types. But as we've talked about before, Langen, I think, is one of the most deserving people on this list.
Despite not enjoying shrimp and grits, he was able to be named a captain at a Southern school.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only knock you can come up with.
That's about it. That is about it. We've known that for 4 years now.
Yeah. Sunbelt Conference also releasing their all-conference teams last week. Raymond Johnson at defensive line, Rashad Byrd at linebacker, Kendrick Duncan all on the first-team defense in the Sunbelt Conference. Wesley Kennedy also the first-team return specialist in the SBC. Conference also putting out the preseason rankings. Georgia Southern comes in second in the Eastern Division.
To be expected.
Right. Behind Appalachian State.
Correct.
App State got 9 of the 10 first place votes. Troy got the only other one. Troy's in third behind Georgia Southern. Georgia State in fourth. Coastal Carolina in fifth. On the Western Division side, a little bit tighter than I thought it would be. And one of the first place votes is because South Alabama can vote for themselves. Louisiana at the top in the Western Division.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all. Louisiana at the top in the Western Division, they got 7 of the 10 first-place votes. Arkansas State in the 2 spot with 2 first-place votes. South Alabama making the jump up to the 3rd spot in the Western Division with 1 first-place vote. Texas State and ULM follow in that order, neck and neck for that 4th spot in the Western Division. But this is more, you and I were talking about it before we started recording today, of this is one of the years that there's not a whole lot of teams, and we've talked about it in years past, how there's not a whole lot of teams you can just kind of say, okay, we're going to run out there and we're going to beat them. Back in the FCS days, there were teams that you could do that with. You could just run out there, not have your best game, and still wallop them.
Without a doubt.
In the Sun Belt Conference,
can't do it.
You can't do it. And especially this year, there's so much parity in this league that we were talking about it before. Coastal Carolina, a team that has the least number of points as far as the preseason predicted order of finish in either side, they're 5th in the Eastern Division, but that's a team you got to watch out for.
Yeah, they're returning both of their quarterbacks in Carpenter and Payton, 1,000-yard running back in C.J. Marrable. They're not only returning 2 excellent defensive linemen, they get Jeffrey Gunter back after he transferred to NC State in 2019. He's a bounce back to Coastal. He's been cleared. He's on the roster, so they're going to have one of the best defensive lines in the entire league. But what makes this such a difficult thing to forecast. Look, you could have seen App State and Louisiana winning their divisions. They right. played in both conference title games. That wasn't a hard one. But with that COVID cloud hanging over everything, you not only look at people that could contract the virus, but through contact tracing in regards to position groups. And I think we're getting closer to seeing the league set a minimum number of people that would be active, scholarship people that can be still active before you would look at postponing a game. Because remember, stipulations are you get COVID, you're out 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And if anybody you're around through contact tracing, that's potentially affecting groups. So it's not only saying, okay, you have to have, let's just use the NFL number, for example, you have to have 53 guys that can play. No, you need to have probably 6 offensive linemen, true O-linemen, because you're not going to be plugging in a kicker or a long snapper to play offensive line. That's not what we're talking about. You're probably going to have 6 wide receivers, at least a couple of running backs, probably 3 quarterbacks. I don't know if that one's going to be budged on. Granted, you would need at least that many quarterbacks anyway. The way the standings are, I expected it to be pretty close to this, but not knowing how COVID is going to impact not only these 10 teams, but everybody that they play, could end up being a banner year for the league. It could be a year in which the league struggles. But I just know that starting on Thursday, I'm going to get a chance to see that because South Alabama is in Hattiesburg against Southern Miss as the first league team that plays a game this year.
We're going to get more into the league schedule in just a minute. But one thing that we need to bring up, on Wednesday it came out that Georgia Southern football experiencing their first quote-unquote COVID cluster. And this was not confirmed positive test. This was merely precautionary measures. Georgia Southern would test last week. The results would come in later on in the week, and so you had 2 days where Georgia Southern football practice was shut down. That's 100% to be expected. At some point in time, every team in the country is going to be affected in some way, shape, or form as far as a practice will not happen.
Right.
You've seen it with Appalachian State. You've seen it with ULM. You've seen it with a couple of teams in the conference already.
ULM actually spent a week and a half without workouts. Granted, getting hit by Hurricane Laura, their classes are going to be suspended through Labor Day, but they were not able to get back into a team-organized activity until just yesterday.
And so Georgia Southern did not have football practice because of precautionary measures due to a COVID cluster inside the Football Operations Center Wednesday and Thursday of last week. Friday, Georgia Southern football did not have practice as well. Frank Skolkowski tweeting out one of the most impactful pictures that I have seen on Twitter in a good while, that the entire team comes together, votes, decides, was backed by the coaching staff, that they would not have practice in protest of racial equality. You've seen that with the NBA, Major League Baseball, pretty much any professional sport that is going. You've seen that in some way, shape, or form, and you've seen it with a lot of college teams over the last couple of weeks of not practicing to protest racial equality. And so the back half of the week, Georgia Southern did not practice for a couple of different reasons, and different things have been reported, different things have been said. That's what happened. Wednesday and Thursday was because of coronavirus precautions. They got the results later on in the week. They were going to practice towards the end of the week, yes, as far as coronavirus was concerned. And then that's when the team voted, decided as a team, as a group, backed by the coaching staff and administration, they would not practice Friday due to the racial equality.
That's something that needs to be cleared up, because Friday, if everything was good test-wise, they were going to be back on the field. This wasn't an extension of the precautionary measures. They were good to go on Friday. Granted, they ended up getting back on the field on Sunday night over at Paulson. Here's what I'll say about the team deciding to not take the field for the reasons that they did. We watch these guys practice. We talk to them. We watch them wear blue and white. We largely see them as players. We don't only see them as players. And granted, that's a luxury that you and I get.
Right.
And that's a luxury that a lot of people in the media get. We cover them for what they do on the field, but we know who they are because we understand who they are off the field. You hear all the time, do right, true blue. The events of last week showed me that team gets it.
No doubt.
And it isn't just when you step between those white lines. Do right just doesn't mean you win. True blue just doesn't mean you celebrate on a Saturday night. Do right and true blue are part of every single thing you do, and that's what that team understands. In their classes, in their relationships with each other, that's a reason why they found so much strength in each other when they came together last year, just over a year ago, after the Shy Wirtz situation. And that's that same kind of strength that they found in each other after they learned of Jordan Wiggins' suicide. Now, granted, we don't know the extenuating circumstances for Jordan. Was he upset with the current state of the world? Was it because of social justice? Granted, we're never going to know what he was thinking and why he chose that route. But the level of strength that that team has because of the faith they have in each other, you saw it twice last year. And when you get affected by something like that, when you get world events like we've seen with George Floyd, like with Jacob Blake over these last few weeks and months that have largely separated the culture,
these guys found something that they believed in. They're standing up for what they believe in. I could not be prouder of that group for doing that.
I think that puts it in the perspective that we've talked about with Frank a lot of when you, it's like you were talking about a minute ago, when you come to a game, you see a blue jersey with a number on it and you know who that is. You see them as a 1,000-yard rusher or leading tackler, leading sack. But having the ability and really the honor to get to know these guys, not just with pads on. And Frank has talked about it so much of when he covers somebody, he's not covering them with a ball in their hand. He's covering their life and what they do as a person. And being able to see that group of people that just so happen to be players come together, make that decision, and have it supported by everybody around Eagle Nation, I think that's something big.
I think about the Eagle Walk at Paulson Stadium, where these guys are getting off the iconic yellow buses. Maybe they're walking up to family, friends, and fans that they've known for a couple of years, giving them a hug, maybe giving them a fist pound, maybe saying, hey, we do this every week, kind of like Lenny Bevel hoisting Scott Sloan up like he's in The Lion King. I get a kick out of that every week. And maybe after the game, you go on to Paulson Stadium, you go see them at the Field of Dreams, maybe you take a picture with them. And you don't just do it because, hey, they had the game-winning touchdown or they had eight tackles or maybe talk about Anthony Beck, who was named preseason second team All-League, maybe had five punts of 50 yards or whatever. You don't just do it because of that. You do it because of the relationship that you have with those guys and the people that they are and the people that they are still becoming. And with them doing things like this, we're seeing the kind of people that they want to be. And they're led by such a phenomenal group of men with our coaching staff. And with Coach Lunsford being right at the top, he sets the tone. And I think that them knowing he has their back and them knowing that those coaches have their back, that gave them the impetus to feel that much stronger about this.
As you mentioned, the Eagles would return to the practice field on Sunday evening. As far as everything is concerned, back to practice like normal this week, starting this afternoon, if you're listening to this on time, on Tuesday. And you're getting...
Got to get ready for Campbell. Got 11 days.
Closer and closer to that kickoff. We talked about it last week, how a couple of Sun Belt Conference teams going to be in action this weekend. But a couple of different schedule changes in the college football world. You saw the official start of college football this past weekend, but a couple of schedule changes coming up for this weekend.
NC State had a game moved back. East Carolina had a game moved back. And the ironic thing about that, they were supposed to play Marshall. And if you're a history guy with college football, this is the 50th anniversary of the Marshall plane crash. And they were playing East Carolina the day that they were coming home from Greenville. So that's going to be beyond special for a number of reasons, but they did have to move that back. And then right here in the Sun Belt, ULM and Troy got moved up to September 5th. But as we mentioned, with ULM having to shut down because of COVID and then getting hit by the hurricane, not getting back on the field until just yesterday, that game has been moved back to December the 5th. Now, that's the date that the Sun Belt Championship was supposed to be played, so it's likely that the Sun Belt title would get moved to the 12th now. It does have that flexibility. Granted, Coastal Carolina already plays Liberty on December the 5th, but there's a chance that game could be if they would be the East's representative. Now, I don't think there's an official confirmation regarding the 5th or the 12th, but that's the kind of flexibility that was built into this new schedule this year by having the opportunity to move the championship game back if you need to. That opened up that December the 5th, so now ULM and Troy technically would end the season against each other instead of having to play in a couple days.
Still for Georgia Southern, no news is good news at this point, so we're still aiming for the Campbell Fighting Campbells on September the 12th at Allen E. Paulson Stadium. As of right now, a 6 o'clock kickoff. You've seen a couple of different games around Sun Belt Conference with so many conferences canceling their season, so many teams canceling their season, postponing their season, whatever the case may be. But you've seen more and more Sun Belt Conference games getting picked up by a linear network or a on-cable ESPN platform. You've got Arkansas State and Memphis going to be on, I believe it's on the Mothership. this weekend with Bob Wischusen on the call, which is going to be amazing.
And the layer that got added to that, that just a couple of days ago, the outstanding running back from Memphis, Kenny Gainwell, decided to opt out for the 2020 season. Memphis is a heavy favorite in that game, but you take someone like Gainwell out of the lineup, maybe that's a little bit of a push for Arkansas. They're going to be in that game. I don't think Memphis is 3 touchdowns better than Arkansas State, but you take someone like that out of the equation, maybe Arkansas State can pull one off out there.
So I say that just to say, as of right now, most of the game start times have been set for Georgia Southern, but I could also see a couple of the game times being tweaked a little bit to get picked up by a ESPN or a linear platform coming up in the next couple of weeks. But when we know, we will let you know. But as of now, we know it's September the 12th. It's Campbell, 6 o'clock, Alan E. Paulson, 4 o'clock tailgate.
And I'm psyched for the fact that if this season happens to go as far as we hope it does, this is show-out year for the G5. It's already going to be an asterisk-like season with so many teams and so many conferences saying, we'll try this in the spring. But for those that are going to give it a try, the group of five has an opportunity to not only show the nation what they can do, but maybe some guys who were under the radar, maybe they push themselves into the NFL draft. How awesome would that be?
No, and we're going to talk about it a little bit with Phil Steele next week as we lead into game week, how this could be the year that the entire time the college football playoff has been saying that a G5 representative could get into the playoff. Maybe this is a year, if somebody runs the table, that they let a, like UCF complained all the time that they didn't get into the college football playoff when they were undefeated and proclaimed themselves national championships and put them in on every vehicle on that campus. But maybe this is the year that a G5 gets into the college football playoff, because you don't have a Ohio State type team coming from one of the conferences that is shut down. There's a couple of teams in those conferences that could be fighting for those college football playoff spots. And now, if you've got a team that runs the table, plays a couple of big-time teams, you may see that in there.
The offshoot of that possibility, and I'll make a prediction right now, if a G5 team makes the playoff this year, I think that is going to be the official start of this expanding to an 8-team playoff.
Without a doubt.
I think you almost have to look at it that way.
Especially if they are in that game.
Yeah.
If they are in that game, and Lord knows it would put the college football world on its head if that team were to knock off a top three team, but crazy things have happened.
Yeah.
And if crazy things are going to happen, Lord knows it's going to be this year. Danny's getting ready.
I'm not just warming up. I'm kind of warming up. I'm just...
Got to get warmed up, too, for Georgia Southern men's soccer. So the preseason polls and teams get put out last week for both men's and women's soccer. We'll get to women's soccer in just a moment. But men's soccer picked fourth in the Sun Belt Conference. Now, we talked about it with Coach Murphy last week, how there's only four teams in the Sun Belt Conference that are playing soccer in 2020. Georgia Southern picked fourth, and you talk about each team is allowed to pick themselves. Each team had a first-place vote. The number one seed, Central Arkansas, had 12 points. Georgia Southern had 8 points. And so there's not a whole lot of fluctuation between the first team and the fourth team. You do have three Georgia Southern Eagles picking up all conference preseason selections. Adam Davey, we talked about last week, missed the last four games of the season, but was the leading point scorer for Georgia Southern. Aldair Cortez, and then Jose Bonfim in goal for Georgia Southern, going to be picking up the preseason goalkeeper nomination. And this is a team we talked about with Coach Murphy last week. He's pretty fired up about this team and what they bring to the table.
With Aldair Cortez, this is the third time he has been named a preseason All-League pick. He could become the first Eagle since moving to the Sun Belt to be a three-time postseason All-League pick. For Davey, second time he's been preseason. Bonfim, of course, getting named as a goalkeeper as well. The schedule is going to be reduced, but he's fired up about this team for a reason. And I would like to think that COVID-19 aside, that Eagle Field is going to be flocking.
Ooh, flocking. I like it.
I didn't even mean that, but
flock to Gata FC.
Yeah.
Do it. Women's soccer was picked 8th in the Sun Belt Conference, up 2 spots from where they were picked a year ago. And we talked about it with Josh Moffitt a couple of weeks ago, how he's pretty impressed at the jumps that this team has made going into 2020. Another jump to be made, though, inside Georgia Southern football.
It's back. I don't do it as well as Frank
no,
does.
No, I feel like we need to record it when Frank does it and just have a play button around.
Eagle Nation, we're back.
There you go.
I tried.
But this year, Georgia Southern football is obviously going to look different. So inside Georgia Southern football is going to look a little bit different.
Right.
Going to move to a virtual show where we won't be at a restaurant, at a facility like we have been in years past. So you, myself, Chad Lunsford, and hopefully a couple of players as well, will be inside Bishop Fieldhouse to do this on Facebook Live. Obviously, you can carry it all over the network as well. And so it'll be the same show. It'll just be without a crowd in front of it. But to counteract that, we're doing it a little bit differently, and a lot of the details are going to be coming out on GS Eagles later on this week. And you are going to be able to send a video into us asking Coach a question. You will come up on the screen and ask Coach the question. So it's almost like you are there. You'll get to be on the live stream, talk to Coach. He'll answer your question, and we'll be rocking and rolling.
That was all your idea.
I'm just trying to come up. I swear, we may be the kings of throwing something at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah. And eventually, sometimes we have to find tape to make sure it sticks, but other times it's just a, please let this stick.
Let it stick. Wind up, let it rip.
Look, we would love to be on site at a restaurant or a sports bar to be able to see all you guys, but the current situation of things, it's just not, from a public health standpoint, the thing to do. You've got to try to create that bubble as much as possible. And the luxury of the Bishop Fieldhouse is that it's just on the other side of the TED. So once they finish practice, they can go clean up and then they can walk right over to us instead of having to hop in a car or carpool over to get somewhere. Being player-wise, we're going to get as many as we can. We know that sometimes it may not be possible. Some of the scenery may look different, but like you talked about, Facebook Live, GSEagles.com, you'll be able to listen and watch in the same way, and we'll be able to see at least some of you, depending on the questions that you ask.
And we've talked about this with everything that we've talked about with COVID this year, that there's no manual on how to go about this. So with us asking for you to send videos of asking questions for Coach, you can still tweet us at GS Sports Network to get your questions in. Text us 912-274-3607 as well. But if there's another way of how you would like to get your questions in, get a video of you getting your questions in, let us know. Because if it's possible, we'll make it happen. If there's a way for you to get your questions into Coach, we will make it happen in some way, shape, or form.
Now, you can't grapple down the side of the Bishop Fieldhouse and bang on the window and hold up a piece of cardboard, because I know at least some people that may try to do that. But if you've got to create a way to get us a question, we'll take a look at it.
You know, if somebody were to do that, were to put a ladder up next to Bishop, climb it with a piece of cardboard, with a question, if they went through all that effort, I may actually put it on there.
Yeah, but who's going to be watching the main gate?
Not me.
How are they going to get by whoever at the main gate?
Not me. I don't know. I wouldn't suggest it, but if somebody went through all that trouble, I might do it.
I guess 6 days away, though, and then we'll be able to recap the recent ongoings and offer a preview of those fighting camels out of the Big South.
It'll stay the same Monday nights, 7 to 8 p.m.
Weeks that we have a game.
Correct. So the week of Appalachian State, we will have the game the week of the game, essentially 2 days before this year since it's on a Wednesday.
Right.
The week prior to that is an open week. We won't have it that week. We will let you know when that comes about again. But every Monday that there is a game that week, We'll be inside the Bishop Fieldhouse, 7 to 8 p.m. Facebook Live, GSEagles.com. Tune in all across the Georgia Southern Sports Network.
Locally in town, if you're in your car, 94.9 The Eagle.
Do it to it. That was a lot of news that we had to get to this week.
Volleyball put out its schedule.
We're going to get to that. We've got our...
tease.
We've got our season preview with head coach Chad Willis coming up in just a little bit. But for now, it's time for Roger in another week of Eagle Tales.
Time now for Eagle Tales with Danny Reed and Roger Inman.
Roger, you traveled everywhere, but what are some of the colder places that you've been?
It was neat to go back and look at some stuff on the two trips I did up to, as they call it, Bisonville, North Dakota State. Probably the second coldest place I'll ever be in. The first is going to be in Cedar Falls, Iowa. I don't think anybody get any colder than that. I mean, Cedar Falls, Iowa, and I may have said this in a prior story, Arthur Sparks and I drove our 54 model Scenic Cruiser from here up there to play football. The team flew out, and we got to the hotel the same time the team did, and we left on Thursday. But we got up there and drove back, and it was so damn cold when we got up there that Arthur and I went out to dump the toilet on the bus, and it was froze solid. So we rode back after the game with what we had in the holding tank, and it didn't thaw out till we got south of Paducah, Kentucky. Good news is that was a win and a great atmosphere to play a football game. We got back in Statesboro actually about 2 hours after the team did because they didn't fly out to Sunday morning.
Roger, you never miss a detail. Now let's go to Colin Lacey with this week's Beyond the Bio.
Time now for Beyond the Bio with Colin Lacey.
So we continue on this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. We move on to Beyond the Bio, and this week we're in the Business Operations Office with the Associate Athletic Director, Haley Pruitt. Haley, appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You graduated from Arkansas with a degree in Business Admin, minors in Economics and Sports Management. When did you decide that athletics was kind of something that you wanted to do as a career?
Yeah, I actually kind of knew at a young age that sports was pretty much everything to me, growing up with a family that just bled Razorback sports. And so knowing then, I trying to find a way to connect my skills and talents with the business office operations and accounting specifically. Both of my parents had accounting degrees and kind of knew that from a young age was a skill. I tried to learn the best ways to connect that to the sports world. And when I was in high school, I was able to meet with Bev Lewis, that was the SWA at Arkansas at the time, through a connection with my father. And she connected me to the CFO at Arkansas. And as a freshman, he gave me an opportunity to work in the business office there. And it kind of propelled me to know that was the career for me and that this was the direction I'd be trying to go.
After you graduate from Arkansas, you go on to get two masters from UCF with your MBA and then a degree in sports business management. While you're doing that, you're working with the UCF business office, interning with the CFO of the Florida Sports Citrus in Orlando, and was a financial analyst GA. Where did, A, you have time to do all of that, and what was kind of the passion behind being able to put all that on your plate?
Yeah, it was a lot of time management skills in grad school for sure, but I think everybody goes through that when you're in grad school. You're just kind of learning the combination of real world job experience, but also still being in school. But that, I think I just had a great opportunity with several different people during my time in Orlando, and that was one of the highlights of being in Orlando, is there were a lot of opportunities in a town like that with college and professional sports. But I had an opportunity with my graduate assistantship to work with the National Consortium for Academics and Sport, which is now the Institute of Sport and Social Justice. And that provided me with good opportunities for my school, its schooling itself. But at the same time, I still knew that college athletics is where I was kind of leaning toward in a career path. And so being able to connect with Brad Strickland, the CFO at UCF, was someone who was just a learning tool. And so he let me, you know, and participate in some UCF business office operations the best I could. And then Scott Herring at Florida Citrus Sports was somebody that it was an opportunity to get really hands-on and actually work in a true internship form. And he was great for my time there.
You then go on for about 4.5 years at Ole Miss, starting as an accountant and then moving up to the assistant director of athletic finance. What's the biggest thing that you take from those 4+ years?
I learned a lot in my 4+ years. I think, honestly, in transitioning to this role here, what I've realized some of the biggest takeaways is just the relationships you create with your staff around you, and being able to spend 4.5 years in one place was where I could build relationships with coaches, build relationships with department heads all over the athletic department, and really be able to understand the way their operations work a little better. Because I feel like as the accountant, we may not see how the ins and outs of every recruiting visit or the ins and outs of every marketing show that they need to put on. But by building those relationships, it taught me a lot about how things operate. And then from knowing that, it makes more sense on where you're spending your money, how you're spending your money, and what the priorities are. So I took a lot from learning how those things work over 4.5 years at a school with a lot of resources and big time programs going on there, to be able to move that to somewhere different and being able to kind of chase after those same goals and hear that from the same people.
Now at Ole Miss, you're working with a budget of over $100 million. You move here to Georgia Southern. Obviously, Statesboro doesn't have that budget, but what do you take from being able to do it at kind of the highest level in college athletics and now transitioning here to Georgia Southern?
I think the biggest thing in looking at the differences there is some of more focusing on what is the same. And yes, as you pointed out, it's not a $100 million budget at every place that you work. Those are small, far and few between on that. But I think that it's looking at knowing really things do operate the same, as far as you're still paying scholarships for your student athletes, you're still feeding your student athletes, you're still focused on what's best for them. And so I think that the transition is kind of taking away everything that you know and stripping it down to what are the basics and then building up from there. And I know that, like, coming here and the opportunity this was going to be, that this is a place that's growing and it's on the rise. And so you look at it more from that perspective, or what are the things that we're already doing here that you can build upon that you did at a previous school, that you could say, okay, well, that's something that now we're getting into that space at this level too.
You've talked about a couple of people that have made an impact on your career. Who are some of the biggest mentors that you still kind of look to today as you transition to the new role?
When I've been asked this question in the past from anybody saying, like, who did you reach out to? My first answer has always been Jared Benko. I met Jared when I was a freshman, sophomore maybe at the University of Arkansas, when he was hired to work in the Arkansas business office. And so since then, you know, being able to connect with him over 10 years of my career through different parts of college athletics and his as well, he's always been the first person I would answer on that. But definitely also Clayton Hamilton, that was the CFO at Arkansas at the time, him giving me that first opportunity to work in the business office there. And then he's always been a constant person I can rely on. And Byron Hatch, who's currently working at the SEC office, was also at Arkansas at the time. He's been great. And then a lot of my grad school professors and directors as well.
You talk about how you met Jared kind of at the beginning of your career, and he's talked about it on previous editions, how you were in on his interview at Arkansas. What was it like when you got the phone call from him of him wanting you to come work for him?
It was definitely a full circle moment, and it's something we've joked about since probably me being 19 years old, was someday I'm going to hire you, or someday we're going to work together again, and all these things that has been said before. And something about Jared, probably a lot of people have already realized here, is he is a man of his word. So he did, when he called, I wasn't honestly too surprised. You know, obviously the first reaction was very excited for him that he was coming to take on this role, knowing that he'd wanted an AD job and that he was excited and passionate about what this was going to be here in Statesboro. And so hearing his level of excitement and hearing that he was going to put together a team of people he wanted to work with, I kind of trusted that was going to be a group of people I could work with as well, that if he was telling me it was going to be great and it was going to be an environment that I would like to be in, then I believed that. I think that it was exciting to have the opportunity to have a kind of run a business office myself, and knowing that was the goal from the time I was finishing high school and making that jump to learning what was even available in college athletics. So it was a great opportunity, obviously, and really excited that it came from Jared.
You talk about getting the opportunity to kind of run your own business office. What's kind of the day-to-day like for you, being able to handle pretty much all facets of finances as far as athletics is concerned?
Yeah, I think day-to-day is hard in the business office because everything's different every day. Now, of course, our main focus is paying all the bills, but there is obviously a lot more to it than that. And right now, I think coming into this new, some of my biggest focus is kind of getting in and learning the way things have been done and learning, like, where our focus has been on priority spending. And then from there, kind of trying to open up a little bit more transparency with our coaches and department on what their priority should be. Is that in line with the way we've budgeted in the past? Can we be more specific on those things? Can we look for places of where we think there's going to be growth and apply that to where the most important areas are right now? And then also be able to hold people accountable throughout the department of saying that this is the where we want to spend our money, then we need to be devoted to that and not use resources in other areas that may be a little less of our focus right now.
One of the things that seems like a kind of constant in everybody that Jared's brought in the last couple of months is they've got the passion for college athletics and the passion for Georgia Southern now. Where does that kind of come from, kind of in your upbringing of where did the passion of wherever you're at, that's where your passion lies?
I think it started with my parents, and both of my parents are sports fans, so it just kind of started as we loved sports, and if you were going to get to be involved in that, it was more fun than it ever was work. And so being able to make that your career still kind of seems a little bit like it's more fun sometimes than work. Sometimes it could be the opposite, but you know, you learn every day it's something different. But I think that kind of leads to your building a passion when you're just enjoying what you're doing. And when you're involved and you feel like you can go to a game on a weekend and see the kind of the fruits of what you're doing, and you can really see the connection to, even though, and as a, you know, the business office, we don't have a day-to-day touch point with a student athlete the way a coach does, you can still feel like, oh, I'm very glad that we were able to provide X, Y, and Z for the student athlete, and that our resources are being used in that way. Being able to have donors that are supporting certain events for students or certain parts of their experience, and that we get to make sure that those things are being utilized correctly. Those things, it always kind of gives you that energizing passion to say again, okay, I can go back for another week and do this, watching the way it's paid off.
Finally, before we let you go, this segment's called Beyond the Bio. Give us something that people seeing you on a day-to-day basis may not know, something beyond your bio.
I'll kind of tie it into just this experience of being able to come here to Georgia Southern. Part of this role is that I'm the sport administrator for women's soccer, and that was really appealing because I did grow up playing soccer, spent a lot of time on a soccer field growing up. My younger brother played, our whole family spent lots of hours playing soccer, and my dad has even been a high school soccer coach in Arkansas for several years. So that part of this job and being able to now work with Coach Moffitt and be around that program, it's really exciting to me because soccer is something that has been a passion for the time I was 5 years old.
Haley, appreciate the time. Appreciate everything that you do for Georgia Southern Athletics, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Once again, that is Haley Pruitt, the new CFO for Georgia Southern Athletics, Associate Athletic Director for Business Operations as well. We've talked about it with a couple of the new additions that we've had on the podcast and Beyond the Bio, whether it be Chris Davis, the Deputy Athletic Director, Eric Reasoner. You're going to hear from Ben Rodriguez next week as well. But so many of the new additions have so much passion for not only what they do, but passion for making the student-athlete experience so much better.
The common thread is Jared Benko. He knew what he wanted when he got here. He knew the kind of people he needed to put in the certain positions. And Haley's just another reflection of the kind of direction that we are headed. Despite us being in the middle of this worldwide pandemic, he has still been able to accomplish what he has. And I'm looking forward to see what Haley does here.
I can only imagine taking over the finances for a Division I college athletic department during the pandemic. Everybody talks about, I think I saw something where the Braves ownership put out that last year they had, at this point in time in the year, they had made $32 million or something, and now they're only up to like $5 million. It's something astronomical.
I don't even balance my own checkbook.
Yeah. You move my $10 from here to there, and that's about balancing me. But a good balance for a Georgia Southern athletic program, you go to Georgia Southern Volleyball and Chad Willis, one of the best people to just sit and have a conversation with in this department.
Never short on energy.
No.
Very honest. Very excited. And they just had their schedule announced. And he's all fired up about the upcoming season.
So we continue our fall sports previews. We step into the office for Georgia Southern Volleyball and head coach Chad Willis. And Chad, everybody's talked about kind of ad nauseum about coronavirus over the last couple of months. For Georgia Southern Volleyball, what does that new normal kind of look like with you guys? And a little bit different from you as far as from soccer or football, that you're inside and you're having to be relatively close quarters at times.
Yeah, Colin, thanks for having me. It's good to be back on, and want to wish everybody out there in Eagle Nation a hearty hello and thoughts or prayers with everybody. Hope you're staying safe. Hope you're staying healthy. We can't wait to see you back on campus here soon. But yeah, it's been interesting to say the least. For us, you know, we've just really been focused on controlling what we can control through this process. You know, we started preseason back on August 5th with our first practice. You know, we were able to get all the way through preseason. And I think that is really a testament to our administration for providing the support, our coaching staff, our student athletes, and more importantly, our sports medicine staff. You know, Wendy Deal, who's our athletic trainer, and her and Brandy and her staff staff have done a remarkable job of just putting the right protocols in place that have allowed us to feel not only comfortable but confident that we can come in every single day, train, do what we need to do, but do it in a safe environment that ultimately we feel like we're protecting our student athletes. So we're grateful for that. Like I said, it was a great preseason. I guess maybe the biggest thing about it is we got through it and we're able to show that these protocols do work and that we do have the right pieces in place in order for us to compete and get after it, you know, in a safe environment.
When you look at what COVID kind of affects, one of the biggest things that jumps off the page is the schedule. Not necessarily going into detail on what games and whatnot, but how difficult has it made scheduling for 2020 for you guys?
Well, other than the fact that I feel like every 5 hours a new schedule comes out, and clearly a lot of that has just been fluid because you've got a lot of conferences and schools that are making independent decisions. And again, for us through the whole process, it's just been, you know, control what you can control. I'm really fortunate and proud of the Sun Belt for putting together a model that, you know, I feel comfortable is going to provide somewhat of a quality season for our student athletes. And Colin, I mean, honestly, that's what this should be about. You know, every thought process should be, how can we provide a quality experience for our student athletes? And so, you know, we're moving to this baseball softball model, which is, you know, playing like a series in a weekend against one opponent. It's going to get us 16 conference matches total over a 6-week span. It's got built-in bye weeks, which I think is great, considering, you know, we're playing 3 matches in a weekend, which is sort of abnormal for us during the conference season, but also with all the uncertainty with COVID and what's going on. And then I think the best thing about it is, you know, we're having a conference tournament. It's going to take all 12 teams. So each school, each student athlete, each team is going to, you know, hopefully get that championship experience. You know, when we look back on it, is it ideal? Absolutely not. But again, we can't control that. The only thing that we can control is the experience we are providing. And I feel really, really confident that our schedule is set up to do that.
You're entering your second season here at Georgia Southern. How much more comfortable has this offseason been? Got here in January 19, I believe it was. When you look back, how much more comfortable has this offseason been as opposed to last year coming in your first season?
Sure. I think, you know, clearly we're in a more comfortable space. But, you know, the one thing I constantly challenge our staff and our team with is, you know, don't get comfortable. You know, I think comfortable sort of gets you to a place where it manifests mediocrity, and we never want to be a program that feels like we're in a place where, okay, you know, we're comfortable, so to speak. The one thing I will say going into year two is I feel like there's a lot more excitement. You know, year one, you know, clearly trying to get everybody acclimated to us as a staff and our cornerstones, the things that we were going to be about. What I'm really the most proud of right now is just our team, you know, our student athletes, the group that we have come back, the three freshmen that we brought in. You know, it's just such a different environment in the gym and in the locker room, for that matter. You know, the young ladies worked really hard in the spring to focus on developing better relationships. Open, honest, and genuine conversations has been a common theme for us since we've gotten here. Our ability to not only embrace but manage conflict and do it in a healthy way that allows us to grow and get better. And what I've constantly told them, you know, is if we can take care of those things off the court, I feel really confident in the work that we're putting in the gym. And coming off of our 10 days worth of preseason, and this is exactly what I told the team on that last day, I'm encouraged, I'm inspired. I thought the energy level, the intensity level, the way we executed, really high. And honestly, for me, that's the most exciting thing going into year two, because that's a product of all the work that they have put in, on the individual level, but also as a team to get us to that point. So comfort, sure, because, you know, it's year two and we kind of have a better idea of knowing what to expect. But I think more than anything, there's just a lot of excitement to see the growth potential we have just within our team and for our program moving forward.
Obviously, in year one, day one, you can't fully implement your system and what 100% that you want this program to look like. What's some of the biggest things that you look to grow in this program, not only in 2020, but kind of the next couple of years?
Yeah, I constantly go back to our four cornerstones, you know, the pillars or the anchors, so to speak, of our program that ultimately lays a foundation for what we're going to be about, you know, and that's always going to be academic integrity. You know, we saw our team come off one of the best years academically that this program has had, I think, in the last 5 years. A spring semester that was cut short due to COVID and everybody transitioning online, and we had one of the highest team GPAs in program history for that semester. And then there's the athletic excellence piece, you know, and again, that goes back to all the work that our student athletes are putting in the gym every single day, but also tying into that sports performance and strength and conditioning and sports medicine and the time and the commitment they're dedicating to being a 24-hour student athlete, not just a 8 to 11 practice type player who, you know, come in, do your work, get out, and don't think about it. So we've seen a big push there. And then clearly in the two areas that I'm probably the most proud of as a coach, the leadership development and the service piece. You know, we constantly are talking with our student athletes about, you know, what leadership looks like, and that we want to be drivers, you know, and not passengers. You know, we don't want to be guests. We want to be hosts. We want our student athletes to put themselves in a position where, you know, they feel confident in their ability to lead. They're equipped. They're prepared to lead, not only now, but ultimately when they leave here. And then that allows them to go impact others through service. So as we continue to push forward, as we continue to bring in, you know, high character, good, talented players to come in here, results, I think, are going to start to speak for themselves. But more importantly, I'm proud of the culture that we have in place because it's setting a standard, I think, for what we want to do as a team, but also for what everybody else on the outside seeing as well.
I know your staff is a big part of building that culture and helping you with it. The only change in your staff for this year is that the volunteer assistant, Naomi Posada, now the head coach, is shorter, and you bring in Zachary Harris. Mm-hmm. What are some of the qualities that he brings to this team that really stood out to you?
Yeah, we're excited to have Zach for a number of different reasons. One, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, Zach was one of the original Hanner Hectics. He sort of spearheaded that student group that was very passionate about our team and showing up to matches. He has a knowledge for volleyball. He does a lot with the men's club team here. But one thing we're really going to lean on Zach heavily for going into this year, and then when he transitions into our grad spot the following year, is his experience in graphics, art, and design. You know, social media, it's no secret, has been a big focus and big push of ours as a program and as a staff. And a lot of people don't realize this, but Zach is sort of the mastermind behind a lot of those graphics and content that we've been putting out this past year and a half. So we're really ecstatic to keep him on for, you know, a couple more years so that he can continue to get experience there that's going to help him hopefully land a really nice job after he's done with us. But in the meantime, we're going to take full advantage of just his expertise, his experience. And, you know, I say this all the time, it helps to surround yourself not only with quality people, but people who are passionate, you know, about pursuing the mission of what we're essentially doing here, and that's transforming lives. And Zach does that every single day. He's got an incredible heart for our team and for these young ladies. And he meets everything that we talk about what we need to do as a staff to serve this team. So we're looking forward to having him.
When you really dive into 2020 and what this team looks like on the court, you returned 4 of your top 5 attackers from last year on the offensive side. What does that mean, having that kind of nucleus back?
Yeah, I mean, it speaks a lot to hopefully what we're going to be able to do on that side of the ball, you know, this season. And, you know, I'm a numbers guy, Colin, and, you know, anybody's going to tell you when you look at what we did last year, you know, we just didn't score enough points, you know, and in this game, you know, you've got to be able to put the ball away. You've got to be able to average anywhere from, you know, 11 and a half to 13 kills a set. And we were below that statistical mark majority of last year. So having 4 of those 5 primary attackers back, and then also, you know, returning Madison Brown, you know, who started every match for us last year, you know, it's going to speak volumes to the experience that we're just going to have on the court as we continue to get better. And then, you know, we've added another big offensive piece and Chambly Russell, who came in as a freshman, and Hannah McLaughlin, who joined us mid-semester last spring. And they've just added a ton of depth to that attacking group. So yeah, offensively, I look for us to be better, to be stronger, for sure. But then on the defensive side of the ball, we return a lot of those pieces as well. So, you know, we talked about that was the idea of playing a lot of young people last year, is that, you know, it was going to be a struggle. And it was a struggle, not going to lie. It wasn't, and nobody was happy with the results that we had on paper, but everyone understood that, you know, if we could stay the course, stay resilient, we had a great spring from a training perspective. The girls worked really hard over the summer, even though, you know, they were back home by themselves. Everybody had a ball, was getting touches in, and you could just see that, you know, from the day we started preseason, that this team is very different than what we had last year, and they're motivated, they're inspired, they're ready to go.
You talk about how good preseason was and spring practice was as well. When you look at kind of where this team was last year and now to this year, who are some of the ones that have really made a big jump?
Yeah, I think, you know, I could honestly, Colin, go through, you know, our whole roster, because one of the things that we talk about is whether you're impacting us in a role that's on the court, you know, as a starter, or, you know, somebody that's just in the locker room or off the court, you know, talking about that leadership development piece, really setting the standard and holding people accountable to what those standards look like. You know, across the board, we have a lot of just really great people here. You know, from a volleyball standpoint, from a playing standpoint, you know, you alluded to it. You know, we return quite a few offensive pieces. Clearly, Maya Wilson coming into her sophomore year. You know, Maya has high expectations for herself, and we do as well. Baylor Bumford coming back, you know, put together a lot of really solid matches and sets for us last year. Madison Brown, who I alluded to, you know, who was in that starting setter role and going into her junior year, I think had a great spring training with Taylor and getting some more individual reps in and is in a better headspace to be able to lead our offense. You look at, you know, I mentioned it, but Chandley Russell, a freshman outside, you know, from the state of Georgia, player of the year over in the Atlanta area, is going to add a lot of offensive firepower to our team. Landon Jones is our starting libero coming back as well. And that's probably been the one biggest jump for us this year, is just our first contact in terms of ball control, serve, receive. That DS, what we call them, our bro or our nugget group, all five of them. You've got Nico, you've got Landon, you've got Meredith, you've got Ainsley, and you've got Rebecca Farthing, who are really just setting a tone for what we're going to do with first contact. And so, we feel really confident that we've got a lot of really good pieces in play this year. And I feel like we've also had a lot of conversations about we're going to need to rely on a little bit of everything from everyone for us to be able to have a good year and do what we want to do.
What's the biggest step that you look for this team to take in 2020?
Biggest step that I want to see us take in 2020 is just, again, to have that Gatta mentality in every match that we go into, and really not focus so much on results or letting the wins and losses speak for us, but just have a consistent mentality that is, you know what, we're going to pursue excellence every single day. We're not going to worry about what everybody else is doing. We're not going to compare ourselves to anyone or anything. We're going to focus on coming in, controlling what we can control, and our attitude, our effort, and our actions towards others. We're going to gatta. We're going to work hard. We're going to put one foot in front of the other, and we're going to watch us get better. And I think for me, the biggest thing I'm looking forward to in 2020 is just starting to see some of that take shape in the form of results. You know, I think we're clearly going to be a better team, you know, as we continue to bring more people into this program and the job that Taylor and Nee have done recruiting and adding pieces to this, the returners and how they're investing in what we're about and our cornerstones, the culture just in general. Everything is really starting to take shape. So I'm just excited in 2020 for us to take just that next step forward, whatever that looks like.
You talked about it earlier, how social media has been a big part of your program, and Zach definitely helps that. What's some of the big social plans you've got coming up for Georgia Southern Volleyball?
Well, I mean, I can't reveal all of our secrets, Colin. I mean, it's, you know, I'll tell you this. I said it has been so refreshing with Jared coming in and the push that he's made on that front as well, with just the rebranding of Georgia Southern and everything that he and his staff are doing on their end to just get the brand out there, push the brand and make it more visible. And for us, you know, as a staff that really focuses a lot on social media, you know, that's exciting for us, you know, because you know, I want our players, I want our program to be visible. You know, I want everybody out there in Eagle Nation to understand, you know, exactly what we stand for and what we're doing. And we're not here just to win games. We're not here just to graduate and get good grades. We're here to lead. We're here to serve, because ultimately that's what life is gonna measure us on. And so for us to be able to have the means to make our student athletes and our program visible, whether it be anything from what we're doing in practice and games, social justice issues right now, the vote, the election coming up, everything in today's world that's going on, COVID and that as well, you know, we're just trying to do our part to make our program visible, make our student athletes available, encouraging them to use that platform for good, you know, and to get their voices out there and to get their voices heard.
Chad, appreciate the time. Good luck this year.
Colin, thank you. Hail Southern.
Once again, head coach Chad Willis for Georgia Southern Volleyball.
He didn't disappoint.
No, never does. Never does. We talked about it a little bit earlier, how volleyball announced the season. You're going to go for, as Coach Willis talked about, a almost like a baseball, softball kind of schedule where you're having a three-game series, essentially, with a certain team. That starts on September the 25th in Hanner Fieldhouse. Appalachian State comes to Hanner. It'll be the first team to play a game officially on the new floor.
Ooh.
You seem really excited about that.
We'll be in Louisiana that weekend, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Darn. Well, we'll watch the games.
Watch it on the Plus.
Yes, we will. It'll be 11 a.m. first serve.
Oh, I don't know how we're going to watch that one. That's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, because that's 10 a.m. Central Time?
Well, it depends on what time we would be leaving on Friday.
So maybe we could get to the 11 a.m. one, get on the plane, and then...
Maybe. We're going to have to check on that.
This is when we get into logistics of football season.
We've got almost a month. We'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out when we get there. But it'll start September the 25th against Appalachian State. And you'll have a 16-game Sun Belt Conference schedule. The only kind of kink in the chain is the Georgia State, because why would that not be the kink in the chain? You will have two different two-game series with the Panthers. It starts October the 1st and 2nd up in Atlanta, and then later on in the season, Georgia State will return the trip to Hanner Fieldhouse Thursday, October 29th, and Friday, October 30th. So you'll play four times against Georgia State, three times each against Appalachian State to open the season, as we mentioned, Troy from October 9th through the 10th, South Alabama, October 23rd and 24th, and then Coastal Carolina, November 6th through the 7th. And then everybody heads to Foley, Alabama for the Sun Belt Conference Championship, which will be taking all 12 teams. And I think in the weirdness of all of this, you almost have to take all 12 teams because you miss seeing so many of the teams.
Well, I think they want everybody to go to Lambert's Cafe, too. I think that's the real reason.
I think we should try to go cover that.
I'd be fine with it. You've never seen a dinner roll until you've seen the dinner rolls at Lambert's Cafe.
Yeah, and they get thrown at you.
And if you're not ready,
duck.
Yeah, but then something on the wall falls off. Because these are not big rolls. They're dense rolls.
Yes. They're not the light, fluffy...
They're not the yeast rolls.
No, they're delicious. Absolutely delicious. And I think I ate 14 of them when we went down there. We should get Chad Willis, and being the social media mongol that he is,
I thought about something, but go ahead.
We should have him do a video of the volleyball team as they're throwing the dinner rolls, setting it, spiking it.
That'd be a really good idea if they could do that.
I think he'd be all about it.
You know what I just thought about?
No, but...
All right, 2 years ago when we went to Mobile for that series against Southside, we had a chance to go to Lambert's Cafe when one of the days was rained out and ended up playing a doubleheader.
Yeah, I've never been so happy for rain in my life.
All right, number one, the size of Lambert's Cafe. It's not a traditional cafe. It is huge.
Right.
And they've got this...
Large checkers.
Yeah. We played a couple games out there while we were waiting for our table. Well, the wind was blowing so much that the pieces kept blowing. Yeah.
It almost has frisbee-sized checkers.
Yeah.
And you and I played as we waited for our table, and there's a picture of you sitting there and looking at the checkerboard trying to find your next move. And I don't know why, it just makes me laugh so much, because it's almost like when somebody goes and sits in one of those big Adirondack chairs, and they just look so little. It's so funny.
The board made
it.
Me look small.
It did.
King me.
I had to, a couple times. I can't remember who won either.
I won.
Oh, okay.
I took two out.
That's probably why I couldn't remember.
You don't remember the painful stuff. You only remember the good times.
I'm trying to suppress those memories. But looking ahead and looking forward to 2020 for Georgia Southern Volleyball, that'll get going on September the 25th. The week ahead is going to be a big one for Georgia Southern, not only getting to watch some of the Sun Belt Conference teams hit the gridiron. Got a couple of games this weekend for Sun Belt Conference teams. You've got Inside Georgia Southern Football coming up next Monday from 7 to 8 p.m. Again, that will be a virtual show on Facebook Live. You can get it on gseagles.com and all across the Georgia Southern Sports Network as well. Make sure to send in your videos. Again, details will be coming out on how to send in the videos on the gseagles.com website coming up later on this week, so be on the lookout for that. But until next week, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.